Hi, everybody. Today's pre-accident podcast is brought to you by Underwriters Laboratory, Worker Health and Safety. Now, they've got a new 11-module program, and the entire reason they're sponsoring the podcast is to introduce you to these modules.
So the first title we're going to release is more informational for organizations, and it's really designed to help educate the entire population related to the new view of safety. So we get into looking at how the best-in-class organizations are utilizing these techniques to drive improvement, but ultimately set up the rest of the content that will be coming online at the end of the first quarter. This first module will be available for free, and we'll announce soon when you're able to access that content as well as where. Thank you.
All this at ulworkplace.com. Now, let's listen to the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Conklin. Well, let's talk today about leadership in this podcast, because I think the one place where we are falling down, at least a little bit, and I could be wrong, I'm really open to your feedback on this, is around leadership. So we joke all the time that asking employees to be safer is not a very fruitful way to get safety to happen in your organization, right? If you cared more, you'd be safer. And yet in the same breath, I would tell you that with leadership, that's almost exactly what we do is we ask them to perform differently. And if leadership are going to be key to creating highly reliable organizations, safety differently organizations, then one of the things I think we have to tackle is what do we want leadership to look like? And to do that, I've asked a couple people to sort of put together some thoughts around that. And we're going to talk today with Bob Edwards and John Allspaugh. I asked both of them during recent opportunities how they think about leading. One of them works with lots and lots of companies. The other one leads a gigantic web-based organization that's super, super reliable. And we'll have opportunities to have more of these leadership discussions because I think we should. I think our challenge is to not only ask leaders to be better leaders, but then to structurally create systems that allow leadership to be better. And one of the ways we do that, I think, is by actually physically changing the way leadership happens in our organization. So if we have an accident reporting system that automatically triggers an email to the senior leader, and the senior leader's tendency is then to call immediately whoever put the report in to tell them what the hell is going on there, maybe one of the ways we get them to be better at responding to events is by actually taking that reporting mechanism and either changing it so it doesn't immediately email or removing it so that it never emails and allows the leader to be contacted when the organization that had the failure has something to say. We can talk more about that. That was a pretty quick little discussion. But I think ways we think about structurally changing leadership allow us the opportunity to actually create leaders that are a product of a system that really requires or creates good leadership. And that's where I want you to be in this thinking. Leadership is key. It's everything. And how leaders respond matters. And one of the ways we do is we create systems where leaders respond in a way that allows our mid-level leadership, field leaders, supervisors, et cetera, to be as smart as they possibly can. So we should just kind of play with this idea and see what happens. Let's listen carefully to Bob Edwards right out of the chute talking about what he thinks about leaders and how he feels leaders are kind of trapped in organizations that are moving towards the new view.
Yeah, we've been doing this HOP stuff for a while and operational learning, and I just have had the privilege of working with a lot of different companies and a lot of different places, and you know, the people on the line oftentimes feel trapped. They're there shooting screws all day long or plugging wires all, and they sort of have, here I am, this is what I have to do. And so what I've noticed is that of course they're trapped because they're literally tied to the line. But what I'm seeing is that in a lot of cases, leadership seems kind of trapped too. You know, I got 500 emails a week coming in. I've got this report due. I've got that report. I've got meeting after meeting. I've got meetings on top of meetings. And I don't seem to be able to figure out how to sort of stop the madness.
So what do we do? I mean, so that's the question, right?
There's nothing we can do. We just give up.
Give up.
Go,
okay.
Sorry, give, well, go, that's home. Right, that was a short one, wasn't it?
Thanks for your time, everyone.
Right. I think it's really interesting because even in the world of lean, we talk about do the things that are value add. So we preach this stuff.
Yeah.
But are we really looking at the stuff that we're doing and saying, is this actually bringing value to the customer, to my employees, to the business? Is it really truly bringing value? Because if it's not, it may be something we can do away with.
So you're really referring to leadership actions, what leaders do.
Yeah, but I think their actions is tied to their beliefs. If they believe they have no choice but to kind of get all this stuff done and do all these emails and go to all these meetings, then that's kind of what they do. And they end up, and they get, and they have metrics upon metrics. You've heard it said a bunch, right? If you don't measure it, it won't get done.
Right, right, right.
And so, like, in my case, I had if you think of a scorecard on the Monday morning safety meeting of like a spreadsheet that would fit on a screen. I had 2 pages of that. I measured everything. Well, when we kind of rethought this, I'm not at that site anymore, but now they've dropped it down to about a third of a page. So we need metrics, but I think we believe that the only way things got done was if we measured them. So
we'll pull the string on this idea that they're doing things that add no value. Like, you're talking about observations. Like, I kind of am convinced a management walk around just to show your face on the production floor is not worth a crap.
Well, it's probably better than never going out there.
I almost wonder if it is.
Really? Yeah. Well, I know this, that we tend to tell and show managers what we think they want to see and hear. So when they come around, we're kind of showing them what we think they want to see and hear too much of the time. I've seen this happen with some sites, is instead of doing observations, especially with like high-level managers, they have folks that will go out and actually, they're interested in learning about the operator struggles. Not in going to see if you're doing it right, but going to see if procedures that you have are even doable as written. And so it kind of changes that around. Instead of me coming out to inspect you, I'm coming out to learn from you.
Okay.
So that's a little different than how we've done. Like, I've done a lot of audits in the past, and the audits, we sort of had that seagull effect, right? You fly in and take
poop.
A crap on everybody, yep. And leave, right?
Poop everywhere.
That's right. But we started even changing that and saying, you know what? What if we go in and look for system weaknesses and look at how are we doing when it comes to what we're expecting to be done, and does it make sense? But then also help them figure out ways to make it better. Well, we changed up the way we did audits. It took us a little while. But we didn't just stay in that same routine of going and doing the same thing over and over and expecting we're going to sooner or later get better performance.
So where does that put us? What should leaders be fixated on? What should they measure, in your opinion?
Yeah, so measuring is interesting because anytime you put a metric on something, you stand the chance of getting something, getting some behavior that you actually weren't intending. Quick example. If a airline, for example, gets measured on their pushback time, then they close the door 10 minutes before the plane leaves, and they won't open it for anything because their metric was met. Now, you may sit on the tarmac for an hour,
yeah,
but you can't leave, but they made their metric. So the metric was actually not driving better customer care and better customer service. It was, but they, it was a good number. They got a good number. So I think we got to really think about our metrics all everywhere. Are the metrics really asking people to, if I put this metric in place, what is it going to give us? Really? Not what am I going to think it's going to give me, but what do you tell me? So I've got the metric that I think makes sense, but let me ask you. Here's a quick example. We used to do production meetings, and we would come into this production meeting. It takes us an hour to prep for this meeting to tell the manager how we knew that we were running good. So that seemed like a terrible waste of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Why doesn't the manager just walk into our work area and us show him the things we use to show that we're running good, running well?
Yeah.
What happened initially was people would spend an hour on the shop floor getting ready for the manager to come. Well, that's not what we want either. I should be able to walk up and you show me, how do you know you're running well? Because you know, because you're supervising the area. And yet I've turned this into this big monster of, spend all this time prepping for me so that you can show me how you're doing, when in fact I should be able to just walk up and talk to you.
So are you saying that the floor level people, floor level leaders should be able to establish the metric that they show the manager. They show the manager what to measure. Are you going to say that? That's bold.
I think that that makes more sense.
That's like having the convicts run the prison, isn't it? A little bit.
Well, it is if we think that we have to manage people. I think part of our problem is we're managing metrics and managing people instead of leading people and inspiring people. So we've become managers of metrics instead of leaders of people. That's what I see a lot. Now, not everywhere, but I see it a lot. And it seems to be pretty prevalent, though, as far as we've put this in place and we think we kind of have to do it now.
What about at the supervisor level? How do supervisors fit in this story? So, because they really are overconsumed by just tons of crap they have to do.
Yeah, and more stuff piled on them. I saw this happen once. We were working with a site, helping them, you know, these learning teams that we do that kind of replace the world of investigations. We were showing them about this, and the leader, the manager over this whole district said, "What do you guys think?" There, and he had one of his area leaders said, "Well, I love this concept, but I don't have time for this because I have a weekly report that's due." And he named the report, and everybody knew what it was. And the general manager guy said, "Well, does it bring any value?" He said, "Well, no, I just have to do it. I've been doing it for years. I turn it in every week like I'm supposed to." And the general manager said to him, "Well, if it doesn't help, then don't do it." And this field supervisor looked right at him and said, "Well, don't we need to get permission?" And he said, "I'm the general manager.
I'm the boss.
I'm the guy that's." But we're so locked into doing these things that we've put in place that they've now become sort of mandatory, whether they really are or not.
So how do we create an environment where supervisors can be more successful?
So we need to question more, right? I mean, I think we need to question, what are we actually doing that brings value? We need to question our employees. I bet they can tell us some ideas on how do they know when they put part A and part B together that it went together well. I mean, I think it's good to get input from those guys. How do they know that they're doing their job correctly? And I think it flows better that direction than it does me coming out once a day to do a shop walk around and telling everybody what I think they need to do. I think that's me telling them what I believe they need to do without listening.
So what's this look like? Walk me through what you think this looks like.
So I think where I'm seeing this change starting to happen, where it seems to be more meaningful, is when leadership realizes their role is to a large degree help make it possible for the guys to get their work done. Now, we say that all the time, but if I really want to understand what does it take to get your job done, Dr. Conklin, then I probably need to go and learn how you actually get your work done instead of me going and telling you how to do the work. So I think the more I can put my mindset in this learning mode, even especially as a leader, you know, what does it actually look like to do the work, then I'm going to be able to make better decisions as a manager.
Cool.
So I don't know. I think it's worth trying. And we're seeing some companies doing it. There's one company that they've said on Wednesdays is no meeting day. It's field trip day. Go to the field. Get out of your office. Get off your email. Put your cell phone down. Go to the field and learn. Now, right at first when they went out there, the guys in the field were like, "What are you doing here?" Right,
because they
think you're coming out there to spy.
Yeah.
When they started to realize, no, they're actually coming out there to learn and understand the complexity of the work, the challenges, the pitfalls, the struggles, and the successes, then pretty soon as they would show up, the guys would start to be excited to see them. "Hey, let me show you what we're doing. Let me show you the challenges we're having."
So then I asked John Ospaugh exactly the same question. "Tell me about leadership and safety differently, leadership in the new view." Only, John, tell it to me as a person who manages a big, 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 highly technical, highly complex organization that counts on, relies on, demands high reliability. And here's what John had to say.
Here's what I would say is that I think sometimes, right, there's, like I said before, there's really no free lunch. And sometimes I think that in leading an organization, sometimes in order to make it real easy to lead an organization, you have to put things in place, either processes or some practices that actually make it harder for the organization to be led. And so, for example, I mean, we could just say procedures or compliance. It's actually pretty hard. It's pretty hard for me and I think that this is a feature, not a bug. It's really hard for me to distill to a single number or even a small number of numbers and small number of metrics the overall health of the organization. And that's, you know, from my perspective, selfishly, that's really inconvenient because I'd love to be able to say to all of the people who are depending on me to lead an engineering organization, amongst all of my peers, that the, you know, our CFO, our CEO, our lead, you know, general counsel and HR and customer support and all of those folks, it sure would be nice if I could say, you know, red, green, or yellow on any given day and just tell them that. But I can't. I can't even pretend to like distill it. And so, but I could, and I think a lot of traditional companies certainly try, and like quantifying with performance reviews and let's come up with some sort of composite number. Here's the number of people who quit and the number of people who we hired, and let's put it all together and let's try to boil it down to this one thing. And I think as a leader, in order to lead, one, I can't just say, well, you got to be okay with the messiness and say everybody else has to be okay with the messiness, but not me. I got to have it nice and neat. It's just not going to work like that. And so, on the flip side, there's value. I don't think that it's not like anything goes and that there's not sort of expectations and guidelines. People want to live up to expectations. Everybody wants to do a really good job. And so I think the balance is as a leader is to make sure that there's enough that it doesn't feel like abject chaos. There's enough of guidelines, enough structure, enough sort of, I don't know, a doctrine or I don't know what the word is, but sort of not really guardrails, but sort of a structural skeleton and maybe a skeleton of practices that allow like flexibility and malleability. There's just like you can bring an organization into a particular direction. I think that's what people call strategy, and without dictating the tactics.
So do you manage those guardrails? Do you manage the upper and lower thresholds?
I don't believe that I should. I certainly people will certainly ask for my input, but I'm going to pay way more attention to the guardrails that people who are doing the work want to put in, and just make sure that we just keep asking good questions. Is this a guardrail that we should still have? Should it be wider? Should it be, you know, more narrow? Should it be? But those aren't questions that I should bear. I don't do that. Whatever it is, I don't do that work. So let me give you an example. We do this thing called continuous deployment. So in a nutshell, it just means that we make small changes to the software frequently. For the most part, it's a risk mitigation, or actually Richard Cook was calling it basically continuous deployment, basically a hedging strategy, right? I'm just going to change this little thing and not this massive thing. I'm not going to roll out this huge multi-millions of lines of code that are changed. But there are these practices. Now, I didn't come up with these practices. What are these practices? Practices are that you only make those changes during quote-unquote office hours, right? And when the time for deploying is like closed, meaning that like normal making changes to the software isn't expected, and when you do it, there's like a it's for a thing that can't wait until the morning. These are practices. I didn't put these in place. These are practices that engineers came up with themselves. And so I feel like my job is, one, to create the conditions where they feel like they've got enough support to come up with those guardrails, number one. And number two, that the space in coming up with the guardrails and modifying them, adjusting them, like as the company gets bigger or as we have newer offices in other time zones, for example, then just as long as they have to have a place where that dialogue can take place. And I feel like that's my job, is to make sure, okay, well, here's where, you know, this isn't some like practice that was put in place by some elder years ago that should never be questioned. And so I feel like that's my role, is to sort of just make sure that all of the soil and the tall grass and the trees and whatever, all of that stuff is got enough room to breathe and adapt, while at the same time providing a direction that people can, enough direction that people can feel like they're moving forward. And I sound like an airport, like a book out of an airport bookstore, don't I?
No, not really. I mean, I actually think what you said was quite remarkable. It's just it's so much fun to talk to somebody who's in this practice, you know, who's actually trying to facilitate this kind of improvisational structure and this highly generative organization, this organization that continuously learns from itself. And the idea, and it's brilliant because, you know, Richard Cook, those guys are kind of into this right now, but this idea of hedging strategies, I think is actually really a powerful, it's definitely a shift in traditional thinking about a reliable system. And it's a really powerful way to look at it, that you're constantly tweaking, really not towards success. You're constantly tweaking away from failure, or you're tweaking away from failure being successful, however you would look at that.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when we were sitting in the top of that hotel, and they were talking about how NASA can always do one more orbit. That idea of that hedging strategy is really interesting to me.
Yeah,
cool.
And it's like you just got to make sure that there's like that there's capacity to do that in the organization, or like there's enough thinking that people are doing around. All right, well, if this doesn't work out, what's a constant sense of unease?
Yeah, and
which I think is different than paranoia.
it is. I think it is. It's this operational unease. But I think a better way to think about it is that we're constantly creating contingencies. But contingencies, even in my mind, sort of implies that there's a thing. But a hedging strategy, sort of this continuous deployment idea, is this: what we're doing is we're constantly sort of impacting our process, so that it doesn't, so that we always have some capacity in there for that process to do what it needs to do. And ultimately, where does that take us? Well, Bob and John are both talking about metrics and measurements, and maybe I helped a little by asking questions around there, but I'm interested because I want to think about how we can structurally change leadership so that it has sustainability and longevity after good leaders move on. Because if you're in an organization that practices the new view, you know a couple things for sure. One thing you know for sure is that when you're good at it, you're really good at it. And when you suck at it, you really suck at it. And you're constantly sort of flitting between the two. And that structural change in the way we do investigations, the way we do event learning, the way we do notifications, the way leaders respond, that seems attainable to me. But then John sort of hits me squarely between the eyes, sort of reminding me in a way that what we manage is capacity. And leadership capacity needs to be present when good things are happening so that we can increase leadership presence when bad things start happening. And that capacity, that challenge, is something we ought to be thinking about. Just kind of think about these ideas, because they're completely worth thinking about. They're very, very interesting. And it's fun to talk to people about this. And I'd really like to talk to you. You know who'd be good? If you're in an organization with a leader that you think is getting this, they understand this, and they're moving forward on this, maybe they'd be a good person to put on the podcast. It'd be kind of fun to listen to them, and I'd love to talk to them. You could do the interview and send it to me. That'd be fine as well. Ultimately, where we are is exactly in the place where now we're talking about how can we create an environment, a method, if you will, to use the safety differently ideas, these new view ideas, to manage very, very reliable systems, systems that have the capacity to manage the consequence of failure in the most positive, almost seamless, almost integrated way we could possibly manage that failure. That's what we want to think about. So that's the podcast. Hey, start thinking about fatalities and serious incidents as well. I'm getting a lot of discussion around that, and I'm not sure we have a good problem set. I don't know if we know what causes fatalities. I mean, I know we know what causes fatalities, but I think if we look at fatalities as kind of the next step after an ankle sprain, I'm not sure that's getting us any place where we need to go. That is the podcast for today. Thank you for being a part of this. Man, it is so stinking much fun having you on board, and I hope your year's going great so far. We're deep into it now. I mean, there's really kind of no going back, that's for sure. And have fun. Give me a ring if you need anything. As always, comments are welcome. Be sure to tell your friends and subscribe. More is better, and now our numbers are gigantic, and things are really good. So as always, learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, be safe.